over here. So here we're doing the letter in volume 4. This is letter 1020. This is also the 22nd day of year. We've had so many letters in the 22nd day of year. Just wondering to look and see what these letters. There's a ton of letters. And the Rebbe is sending this to David Aryeh Bart. He's sending it to him. And the Rebbe said, Shalom Avracha. The Rebbe is attaching a receipt. Can you imagine? The Rebbe has to give the one the receipts. And it's the Rebbe's passing the letters with the receipts for your contribution that I have passed along for our educational work in Africa. The help is something which is very timely, since the work, thank God, has increased and it has to continuously be widened and cover more areas. Years ago, for many years, the education situation of the education in the countries of North Africa were very neglected because of the severe poverty which dominates over there. People very poor, and also because they're lacking of activists and people that should actively do on that in this area. But with thanks to Hashem Yisbarach, to Hashem, that situation has changed in the last year for the better through the educational institution that we have founded over there, yeshivas, yeshivas kitanas, Talmud Torahs for boys and Talmud Torahs for girls, evening classes for workers and a beis medrash for teachers, to prepare teachers and melamdim for the young people there. Our program in North Africa looks forward to raise to establish these Talmud Torahs and yeshivas in all little cities. This work, which is also connected with giving material help materially as food, clothing, and the similar thing, that requires naturally large sums. But it is a very great and a very special privilege to have a part in this holy work, which began with the initiative of my father-in-law, the Rebbe. And I hope those who love Torah in general, and our Hasidim especially, will put effort to give and to raise as much help as possible. This will also help for them great and wide pipelines of blessings and success, both physically and spiritually. And the Rebbe sends a message for your son, Mr. Zalman Yaakov, and I wish him to come home healthy with blessings. So here you see again, the Rebbe was trying to raise the funding for, in this case, in the North Africa. It seems like one of the things over there is not only did they not charge for tuition to come to school, but what they did was actually paid. They gave lunches and they gave food and they gave for free for the children to come. I mean, they came from poor homes. There was no money there to speak of. And this seems to work a lot also in more recent history, like in Russia, when things were really depressed there, when they opened up the schools over there and they invited the children to come to learn. So the way, one of the attractions was to serve breakfast, lunch, and supper, give them, feed them. Sometimes you also feed the parents. Sometimes you feed them. It comes there. So it becomes a worthwhile endeavor to send it to this yeshiva versus sending it to public school. You get some
side benefit. Food motivated.
Food motivated. Kiddush motivated.
When we were doctors, no one would come to any of the lectures ever. And then they started serving donuts and coffee and it was like trickle, you know.
Food attracts.
The Sheila House in Brighton, we looked at it once. Really, only they serve, because I think a breakfast and a lunch.
Yeah. But talk. But I think this whole concept...
You do that for a minute.
This whole concept of providing for children, raising money, providing for children, is unfortunately mostly lost today. The reason why Chabad had such tremendous success originally when they came and the Rebbe was doing is because the yeshivas, they charged very little. Because people came that time from after the Holocaust, they came from Russia, from Poland, from various different places. People didn't have any money to pay for tuition. And a lot of people, even my own in-laws, you know, my wife's parents, they were Holocaust survivors. And, you know, they couldn't afford to pay big tuitions. And the yeshiva that allowed them to come in and pay very little or nothing and or very little was Lubavitch yeshivas. And therefore, that became an attraction for people who wanted yeshiva, but they couldn't afford it. I can only imagine it's today. I mean, I don't know of such a case that they would offer anybody that wants to come to learn in a yeshiva, offer them, you know, free education.
What about a reduced rate?
Sometimes a reduced rate. But, I mean, you'd have a lot of takers today. I mean, you have a lot of, if you opened up a free or even some reduced. I mean, we're trying to get with the government to work some subsidies, or there's various different types of, you know, the separation. But they're working on trying vouchers, and I think in New York State they're actually, Cuomo is actually, they just voted in some, they get it through the back door, maybe they don't allow for this, but,
they can give them books, they can give them supplies, but they can't pay for teachers.
Yeah, but then the other thing is that they do also have, because in the yeshivas they also have the general studies part. So that part of it, they could, and you know, and once you get, you know, the governmental money for that, then somehow you sneak it in already.
Do you think education is like inalienable, right? Like, we don't deny anyone care. If you have no money, we'll still, you know, we'll care, because health is, you know, you can't deny someone care.
Right.
Right. Money, so we'll, you know, pay $2 a week or
but public education.
But yeshivas and stuff don't, you know, I mean,
they say, well, but you see here, I'm just saying, look what a, from the Rebbe's letter over here, look how much the Rebbe was, but my question is, let me just say this, if they offered free education, do you think that we would get hundreds and hundreds of more students, Jewish students, that are going to public school, would come to yeshiva, and would change around their lives? But we don't do that.
But back then, if you didn't pay to go, where was the money coming from to pay the teachers to run?
They raised. So here, the Rebbe was fundraising to pay the bills. Okay, but it's the amount. I mean, we have the expenses are way higher today. But the abilities, people are much wealthier today, and there's a lot of people that could afford a lot more. So you figure, you know, you take what a yeshiva's budget is. I mean, there are people that are, you know, that can afford it. Now, the only question is, you need somebody to go collect the money to do that support, but that seems to be you're saying it's a right that we have. It is a right that we have, and should be maybe something, not totally free, but to allow for parents to give a yeshiva education, I mean, just hypothetically, that would increase it by tremendously, yeah?
So, you know, they have problems with the school. $5,000 a year. So right. Kid, they were going to temple and put two kids through.
So no, I know somebody just joined temple.
It's $5,000.
They asked. This is
no, but then we have the school. So you know what they do is they got this idea. They send out a thing every. They go, the minimum that we need to run the place is $3,300 per person. You could give more. And then they go, I can't give more, I can only give less, I can't give at all. So the people who give more subsidize the people who can't afford it. Right, it's a rolling thing. Yeah. So I don't understand that the yeshiva could do that where, you know, they ask the wealthy people in Brookline and Newton to give more who subsidize the people that can't give. That would be a great idea.
Yeah,
but
well,
it's just the same
thing. It actually probably happens that way. But there's a few things. I mean, some people, I'm just guessing, some people, even if you offer it to them, they don't like to beg, and they don't like to be treated like
pay more.
they would just as if you offered it to them, you know, that they can get an education free and that was the price, that's fine. But if you told them that they have to start begging for it and have to haggling and crying their case and claiming poverty, they'll say, we're going to send to public school. And that's it. I don't know exactly what the statistics here, and I don't know the reasons behind, but I know that there is a lot of kids from, quote-unquote, from homes, meaning, you know, let's say Shomer Shabbos, you know, homes, who send the kids to public school.
Yeah.
And even though, and I also say there's a lot of people that homeschool their kids. Now, their reasoning may be, kid doesn't fit in that, you know, could be. Or sometimes they can't afford it, but they're just not going to come out and say it. Oh, we can't afford it. Or even if they could afford it, they don't want to spend...
Well, it's pride.
They don't want to spend $25,000 on education for a kid. They'd rather not spend it. So it's...
That's why I didn't...
Look,
not
every kid can afford summer camp, you know.
Yeah, but also look at college.
Right.
Don't people have to beg and fill out all these forms to get college?
Well, you know, Rabbi, and I'm not but it's interesting on the YouTube. Like, you get such a crowd here, because I think some of the people are paying Temple Israel $3,000. I'll just go to Chabad, and it's free. But it isn't free, and you ask for money, but I think...
Guess what?
And I might be wrong. A lot of people come here because you don't need tickets, or, you know, I don't think people... I'm not paying that. I'll just come to Chabad, you know. And,
well, Temple Israel, I would say, if you don't pay what you said you're going to pay, they don't give you a ticket.
Really?
That's what a friend of mine just told me.
You have to be paid up.
Young Israel is the same thing. If you're not paid,
Temple Israel now is $3,200 for a couple
to come in.
Well, what's that?
If you say I only can give $1,000, that's fine.
But they don't.
But come to Yontif, if you didn't pay the $1,000, they don't give you a ticket.
No, but you know what's terrible? One year I forgot to pay. I was away and I was late and I forgot and I kept going. And then everyone's like, "Have you got any tickets?" And I go, "I haven't got any tickets." So I went in, they go, "Well, you're late, you didn't get them." But I said, "I've been at this temple 10 years. You know I'm going to pay." But I was very upset, that disrespectful. You know, they don't care. You know.
Right, and not to embarrass a fellow Jew.
No, I felt very embarrassed.
I met a...
you know, because I didn't mean to forget.
I met a fellow in the nursing home here, an elderly fellow in the Sharon Epic Center there. And he said to me, he was a kid, you know, he said, so he went into Newton in Bethel over there. I'm not sure which one, Emmanuel, one of the Bethel, or no, Emmanuel. It was Emmanuel. And there were kids, you know, and, you know, they were 16, but it was the high holidays. You know, they want to go to the services and whatever, you know. He says the guy kicked them out so quick because they didn't have any tickets, you know, whatever.
But you know something?
He says for 18 years he didn't want to have anything to do with the temple, because he felt so hurt that they kicked him out. Eventually, you know, he reconciled. I'm saying, yeah, he says, you know, they kicked him out. You know,
I never understood how a temple could kick anybody out.
It's just, you know, they say, you know what they'll tell you? Get real. It's a business, and that's it. You know, they tell you one thing, and it's a business, and that's it. By some, it's a business. What?
Hey, I never threw anybody out.
This particular guy told me, I'm not sure, this goes back a long, long time ago.
They say, "We'll find you a seat."
And this was a kid, you know, I mean, at the time. I mean, he was very old and sick, so I don't know. This goes back about a couple years ago, he told me. He says he was so angry that he didn't want to go back to a shul. But, you know, but that's it. But that's it.